session number 27345, reel 11.
Thomas Chilton, reel 11. Thomas, did you do any other trips to the continent with the survey ship?
Oh, yes. We went to Cuxhaven, Bremerhaven, Hamburg, Kiel, all doing survey.
Were these all surveys of the dock areas,
yes,
or channels in
channels
general?
Of channels, you know, surveying channels for the boats to come in. The minelayers always went first. The minesweepers always went first because they had to clear. They didn't want to, and then we went in. So in actual fact, we could possibly be in as much danger as anybody else because we were the first one in. And you hadn't got a clue what was going to happen because you didn't go ashore, because we understood if you went ashore there were loads of booby traps and everything else where the soldiers had actually gone. But I tell you what did shake me was two things shook me very, very much, was the state that Hamburg was in. It was just a pile of rubble. That's all we could see from the docks. A pile of rubble. Yet, funny enough, the cafes along the dock front were still there. But if you looked over to see the residential parts and so on, it was just piles of rubble. And we were told that there was one underground shelter that contained over 5,000 people that was just filled in and has never been opened. Because it, as you know, they burnt Hamburg. And there was no oxygen in the air, and all the 5,000 just got killed, and they couldn't evacuate it, so they filled it in. And also another thing that also surprised me was the submarine pens at Kiel. I've seen concrete, but my God, concrete, they're twice the size of this house protecting the pens. Amazing, you know. And then when you saw, I don't know what these weights of these bombs must be. It must be somewhere right around about 10,000 pounds, as I should imagine, because it had actually cracked the concrete, and the concrete was askew with. Like that. How the devil knows they're going to bomb? Unless it was a series of bombs hitting on the same spot that caused it. But there again, the harbour of Kiel was just a ruin. There was wrecks everywhere.
When you did that work initially, when you were going to the continent, would you ever be provided, say, with a guard ship? Because I know there was armament on board the ship to defend itself, but was there a guard ship you might have had that would have stayed near you?
No. Because they, I presume they thought we were well protected with our own armament, 3-inch and pommet. As I say, we had a lot of Oerlikons. Because they were wonderful little thing. Wonderful gun, that Oerlikon. 60 shells, 5 seconds. Marvellous. Wonderful little thing. And I fired one, because we was always told to, we was all trained to do it on board the survey ship. Then you had these two. Well, you could just put yourself in like that. And the muzzle of the Oerlikon is quite long. It's about, I would say it's about 5 foot, about 5 or 6 feet long this morning. To give it the velocity, I presume. But anyway, they were wonderful little guns. Wonderful. And we had them dotted all over the place. All round the bridge, around there, and the stern. They were all down there.
And what about your messing facilities on board the Franklin? What were your facilities? Because you were on for quite some time, weren't you?
Oh, yes. We, just the same as though you was on board a destroyer. You had the mess decks again. And on our survey ship, we had 1, 2, 3 messes on the forecastle. Down the starboard side was the signals and telegraphers on theirs, and over this side, on the port side, was the stoker's mess. Now, and the deck lower was all petty officers, chief petty officers, messes, mess decks. She was well spaced out. She had quite a lot of room for you. The petty officers' messes were quite big, and so were the crew's messes quite big.
What was the crew complement aboard the Franklin?
111.
Because I imagine relationships must have been quite familiar. You must have known quite a lot of people on board.
You knew everybody. Everybody you knew on board ship. From the captain down. Because you had dealings with them all the officers you had dealings with. And the bosun. Especially the bosun. You had dealings with the bosun with everything, because he was in charge of all the upper deck.
Now, you mentioned to me obviously joining the Navy pre-war, and some of the relationships that existed between officers and petty officers and the seamen. At the end of the war, how had that changed?
Oh, terrifically. At the beginning of the war, and peacetime, you were ship's company, and they were officers. And that's what it was. You was the ship's company, and they were officers. You spoke, if you were spoken to, you'd answer back. But you would not get out of line. You wouldn't get out of line at all, because you weren't allowed to get out of line. They were officers, and they had the respect, and you gave them the respect. But of course, during the war, when things became different, when you were attacked, and over at Dunkirk, and when you went to the Battle of Narvik and things like that, the officers asked you more or less, are you all right? You was asked, you wasn't more or less ordered, if you understand me. I'm not saying where you had to do anything, life was life and death, but you was asked if you would do this and that. Now, you want to do this, do that. They treated the seamen the crew as men, and as they should do. And the attitude between officers and men towards the end of the war was first class. Was first class. We had a wonderful complement of officers on the Franklin, because most of them were survey officers, and there was no other ship they could go to. And so you got to know them very, very well indeed. You see, because that was their job and that's their ship. They stay with the ship all the time, because I don't think we had another survey ship. I think we were the only one. I know that they did have small boats with survey ratings on, but I think we were the only one as a survey ship itself. Till the others started to come into being. During the war, they brought another one, I believe. But, no, you often got a clap on the back and all this sort of business. Oh, yes, it's very, very, much more friendly. Much more friendly. And if the captain spoke to you, it wasn't no, I'm the captain sort of business. You was asked or spoken to as a person. Well, that's what I found out, anyway, on the island. I did on the Ivanhoe towards the end, and I did on the Franklin. On the Franklin, more or less, he was asked to do. And our torpedo gunner's mate, Petty Officer Stringer, was a wonderful man. He taught me all I knew. And here again, we come again to the same old business, what I've said to you all the way through my naval life. I was watched over. Because it was his job. I mean, if we did anything wrong, he would have to take the can, but he watched over you more. He left you to your own devices, because you had your own jobs to do, but every week he would ask you, at the start of the week, anything special to do. You say no, just going to do the usual. And that's it. Because she was a, as I say, we had all the Baptists to look after. We had to mix up the what's name, the alkaline for the batteries. And you had to get special permission to do it on the upper deck. Because if you did it too quick, you'd break your beaker. You know, these beakers made of sorts of they were special beakers, but you put your water in, and then you added your sulfuric acid afterwards. But you only had to add so much sulfuric acid at a time, because if you poured it all in, it would blow. It would get so hot, it would just split. And if you got sulfuric acid on the quarter deck, you would well in trouble. So you had to have a nice big canvas container, and there, and nobody had to come near you, and you used to be me and my seaman torpedoman, the torpedo gunner's mate. He didn't bother us. He said, "You've got to do it," he said, "do it." And we'd be up there all on our own, and nobody would come near us, and we'd have a nice glass rod, and you wonder what we were doing, sort of business, if you didn't know. And he says, because if you poured all the acid in, well, then you had to get your hydrofoil to get your measurements, whether it was 1250 or whether it was 1150, how much more sulfuric acid it required. Then you had to get the dirty job of emptying all the batteries out and refilling them with new stuff, because it eventually it deteriorates, you see.
Because it's quite interesting, the jobs that you, as you said earlier, you didn't really go and do the job that you've been trained for in many respects, did you?
I'd done more, and I was involved more.
How did you come to leave Franklin?
I finished my time. Oh, well, I hadn't finished my time. I'd gone over my time. I'd done 8 years instead of 7. And then, then Japan collapsed and everything, because everything was peaceful. Then they started to go through the books. And funny enough, I wasn't the only one that was active service that went out before the hostilities only. Because there was 2 of us on board ship. One was an AB and me. And we pulled into Sheerness. And when we pulled into Sheerness, within an hour we were told to pack and be ready to go to Chatham. Oh, what's this for? Sort of business. When we get to Chatham and report to the Master at Arms office, yes, you're going to be demobbed. Cool. Well, you've done over a year, young man, haven't you? He said, you've done over your time. He said, of course you won't sign on, will you? He said, you've already indicated that you will not sign on. I said, no. No, he said, you'll be going home within 3 or 4 days. And that's when they did. Issued you all your clothing, you know, civvy clothing. I've got a nice brown suit. Rather proud of that brown suit. Went quite a long way. And I took home and I had me hammock. You didn't have the mattress, but you had your hammock. You had your kit bag and everything. And I kept my hammock for about 30 years. And it used to sing up out there. Then it got a little bit too old. And so I had to get rid of it.
Can I ask you now how you feel about having served with the Royal Navy during the Second World War?
I wouldn't have missed it for the world. I'd do it again. If I had the chance, if my time had come again, I'd do it again. But I was pleased that I was an active service man in the Navy and not hostilities only, because I knew what I wanted, if you understand me. And I did get the correct training at the start. If you were called up, you only got about a month, 6 weeks training, and you. But being peacetime, I think my actual training took 4 months, which is a big difference to 6 weeks.
Thank you very much, Thomas.